10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
After my very last radiation treatment for breast cancer, I lay on a cold steel table, hairless, half-dressed, and astonished by the tears streaming down my face. I thought I would feel happy about finally reaching the end of treatment, but instead I was sobbing. At the time, I wasn't sure what emotions I was feeling. Looking back, I think I cried because this body had so bravely made it through 18 months of surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. Ironically, I also cried because I would not be coming back to that familiar table where I had been comforted and encouraged. Instead of joyous, I felt lonely, abandoned, and terrified. This was the rocky beginning of cancer survivorship for me. Elizabeth D. McKinney, MD, MPH. This is the Croc Podcast, and today's episode is Lost in Transition. I want you to forget everything about your cancer. I want you to forget everything about what your doctors have told you. I want you to forget everything about your treatments. And I want you to start with a blank slate. This is Dr. Tom Iannelli, and this is the Croc Podcast. Hey, Crockers. How are you? This is your friend, Dr. Tom Iannelli. On my left, Angel Santana in his producer seat. Angel, how are you?
I'm good. Welcome, welcome.
We finally see the sun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I want to give a shout-out to your Crocker family. Crocker family, great job. Great job. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I have to say, cancer survivors rule, that's for sure. Today's episode, I know what you're saying. I know what you're thinking, Dr. E. Please don't tell me that we're going to do yet another defining survivorship podcast. I hate to tell you guys, you have to take your medicine. You have to take your cod liver oil. You have to take it down. We are going to build a foundation for you guys. And in order to do that, we have to make that foundation rock solid. So recall the first defining survivorship. So prior to Dr. Mullen, who we've talked about in great detail, and his personal experience with cancer. Cancer was a very interesting modality. First of all, going back to the 1960s and before that, actually probably before the 1980s, cancer was treated very aggressively. There was extraordinarily disfiguring and dehumanizing procedures, and really the only thing that doctors and your caretakers thought about was your cure. And rightfully so. But something great happened, not just with Dr. Mullen, but really in the cancer field itself. And that is that many, many more patients were being diagnosed at earlier stages. So this was in the days where PSA was starting to be used for prostate cancer. Mammograms were being used to diagnose breast cancers much earlier. And these were the days when we were starting to try to achieve cures, but at a much less higher cost of morbidity and more the cost of side effects. And we started looking, I can't say to the same level of survivorship and cure, but certainly right behind would be quality of life. And Dr. Mullen, we talked to you, told you, taught you what a great man he was and what he did in his life aside from cancer survivorship advocacy. In his own right, he was an advocate for disparities, healthcare disparities, and always taking the side of the oppressed and the disenfranchised patient. Then had his own cancer experience, a very, very serious cancer experience in his early 30s that almost took his life. And what he really had to come to grips with was that strangeness of being a cancer survivor as a doctor. And what he noticed was that the definition of cancer in those days wasn't just diagnosis, you're a survivor. It was diagnosis, you were a victim. And if you happen to be lucky enough to live 5 years, then we'll call you a survivor. So you had to earn your Eagle Scout, right? You had to do your project and build your park bench and do all that kind of thing. And he said, ain't going to work. You're a survivor from the minute that you're diagnosed. In addition, he really threw the survivorship environment in a real tussle, because he really did not accept what we talked about last week as the binary model for survivorship, meaning that in cancer, you're either cured, not cured, dead or alive, kind of like that sort of one or zero logical progression that we learned when we were learning programming, if you were a computer guy or computer lady, or in logic philosophy courses and things like that. So cancer, according to Dr. Mullen, was not a binary or static situation. It was very dynamic. And cancer survivors, whether they were stage 4 terminal care cases or stage 1 curable cases, there was more in common. There was more of a bond between those survivors, despite the fact that they were on different ends of the spectrum, than anybody ever gave credit for. So Dr. Mullen, God bless you. And if that's all you did was define survivorship, advocate for survivorship, and try to educate and train us in the seasons, as you called them, the seasons of survivorship, that would have been enough. But you didn't do that. So we're going to now, in this Defining Survivorship 3 podcast, we're going to go now one step beyond, 1 year after the publication of Dr. Mullen's paper from the New England Journal of Medicine, 1985. Hopefully get that link for you guys. We're going to be talking today about what Dr. Mullen did with this insight, what he did. And I always say to people, and even in my own head, I say to myself, you know, great events happen in very commonplace environments, right? So, Angel, I listen to your podcast every day. I'm always a day behind, but I listen to it every day. And you talk about such spiritual epiphanies. And this week we talked about forgiveness. We, as your podcast family, listen to forgiveness and scars and all the things we go through in our human experience. But I think that's really the same of thing that we're talking about in life. So these events are happening while you're pumping gas, right? You're in your car. I could hear you pumping gas. I could hear you in your car. I could hear the music when you're pumping gas, right? So, and here's an extraordinary experience that you're bringing me in. You're awakening that spiritual beast within me.
Right.
And you're pumping gas. Like, I want to know, are you doing 89, 93? What octane level are you pumping? But, like, this is very deep stuff, and you're at a gas station. So can you imagine when Dr. Mullen probably convinced 23 of his colleagues, 23 different centers, to get together in all places in 1986 in Albuquerque, New Mexico? So I guess he must have been, I know he has ties to New Mexico. He did a lot of his public health stuff there. So for whatever the reason, I can only imagine the conference room. So there's 23 representatives, probably from some great cancer centers across the United States. And he pulls his colleagues together and he says, we're going to do things better. We have to change the way survivorship is looked at. And that coalition was called the National Coalition Cancer Survivorship Group. Mm-hmm. So again, 1986, they met in some silly conference room somewhere in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I could just see it. Probably, you know, terrible coffee, stale rolls, right, in Danish, and they're all wearing their, you know, tweed jackets and their little dresses and sitting down talking about how they can make changes for survivorship. But that's just the commonplace location that this event occurred, just in a silly conference room somewhere in Albuquerque in 1986. And today we're going to be talking about that coalition and what happened over the next two decades. So now we're going to be fast-forwarding a little bit. So we already know about the acute, the extended, and the permanent seasons of survivorship. We heard from Dr. McKinley, which was a beautiful, written, personal experience. We would call it blogging right nowadays, but it's actually in a beautiful article where she's quoted about her experience with breast cancer and how she felt. And this is exactly what we're talking about when we talk about lost in transition. So when I read from McKinley, about her experience of being on the table. She was not crying because she was done with her treatments, and she was wanted to run out of there and never come back. She was crying because she was done with her treatments. She was crying because she was going from acute treatment, acute survivorship, into a transitional survivorship, a very, very murky place that had never been defined really prior to this coalition. So a patient would feel very protected and comforted being in the arms of their caretakers on a daily basis, weekly basis, getting their chemo, getting blood work, getting their radiation, getting set for surgery. And then all of a sudden, they have you ring a bell, or they give you a cupcake, or they pat you on the butt and they say, you're out of here. You know, Liz, you're done. We'll see you in a month. I can't even imagine, especially back in the day when there was really nothing for survivors in place as far as how to manage that. And now we're not just talking about managing, you know, the psychological and the emotional aspects of cancer. We're talking about everything. We're talking about even the fatigue and the acute reactions of treatment. I know in our radiation clinic, there's the skin reactions and the surgical reactions and things. But more importantly, those both together. So both the emotional, spiritual, as well as the physical. So that's why we started this podcast with her, with an excerpt from her personal experience, because it really defines so nicely what that transitional phase. And although Mullen never used the word or term transitional phase in his three seasons, I think now as oncologists, we do see that transition. And we're going to talk a little bit about that coalition. And more importantly, we're going to talk about what those 23 representatives must have spoken about after they ate their stale Danish and they drank their stale coffee. They must have been talking about the things that we had previously been talking about. What is survivorship? Survivorship is the minute you get diagnosed, you, your family members, your caretakers, your loved ones, your friends, your coworkers, all become cancer survivors from that moment moving forward. Number two is that with the earlier diagnosis of cancer, with patients living longer, there are special needs that need to be addressed during this transitional phase and in the permanent and extended seasons of survivorship for patients that are unique to cancer and can't be broadened for other illnesses. Where do we get all of this from initially? So really, all of the initial data comes from our beautiful children who back in the 50s and the 60s, were pretty much, we call them the canaries in the coal mine, right? These were the victims. These were the experiments. These were the kids that were given toxic poisons. And for some reason, you know, things started changing in the 60s. Tumors started melting away. And we had these kids who were starting to live, survived their leukemia, survived their Wilms tumors, their neuroblastomas, their brain tumors. But the problem was they survived, but the cost was very high. The side effects were tremendous. And we're going to actually have a podcast on my buddy Stevie, who was a pediatric cancer survivor and whose memory I keep actually tattooed on my arm, actually on my right on my right inner arm to remind me of how to live life. And that'll be another podcast, and we won't go any further than that for today. But these pediatric patients really gave that coalition the at least a place to start as far as how to manage this transitional phase of survivorship. So now if you were to fast forward from 1986 to November of 2005, the American Society of Clinical Oncology, which is pretty much the mothership for oncology, and the Institute of Medicine came up with what were the Ten Commandments. Of course, not the Ten Commandments. That's what I'm calling it. Of course, I'm Christianizing it again. And to be clear, this is not a this is a very non-denominational podcast, all inclusionary. But I tend to Christianize things a bit because of my background. But anyway, the Ten Commandments of Survivorship, and what are some of the things that need to be addressed? And we're going to go through each one of them today, Angel, and we're going to take our time, we're going to do it right, and then I hate to tell you guys, we're still not done with defining survivorship. Still have a couple of more, what would you say, sessions to go or podcasts to go, but we're getting there. And by the time we get to podcast 75, I am hopeful that we will be off of this subject. But think about it this way, guys. You're going to get a lot of information. You pick and choose what, you know, interests you. Some people might be interested in the history of survivorship. Some people might not even care, you know. But the bottom line is this information is going to be here for you. You can always go back to it if you want. So let's talk about the Ten Commandments from the National Academy of Medicine and their recommendations. So we're going to break them down into the most elemental parts, and then we're going to talk a little bit more detailed about them. So number one is raising awareness. Number two is establishing a survivorship care plan. Number three is utilizing evidence-based guidelines. That's huge. We're going to talk about that. Number four is developing and implementing quality measures. Number five, models of coordinated care. Number six, survivorship as a public health concern. Number seven, healthcare professional capacity. Number eight, employment-related concerns. Number nine, adequate and affordable health insurance. And number 10 is investments in research. So let's start with number one. I hope you guys are awake, but we're going to keep you going. We're there. Let's talk about raising awareness. So as I said, the 1970s, the 1980s, we now have a migration in stage. It's called the stage migration. We're diagnosing you guys at a much earlier stage. You're getting better treatments, less toxic treatments. You're surviving, you're living longer, you're doing great. But there still is a need to raise awareness as far as the unique needs of a cancer survivor. And we have been very blessed over the last 20 or 30 years because many celebrities who have a tremendous amount of impact. You know, if Ben Stiller came out and said he had prostate cancer, and I saw his article in the Cope magazine, and I've seen other celebrities, I think Christina Applegate with her double mastectomies, I believe, please forgive me if I'm wrong, I could be wrong, but I believe that's correct. And all of these great, courageous, you know, Hollywood people, celebrities, as I said, the actors, musicians, etc., who have made their stories public. They don't have to do that. They don't have to go public with their stories, but these people have helped raise awareness for your cause. Also, I call these the little purple people. You know, if you ever go to a race, you see the Leukemia Society, Lymphoma and Leukemia Society, they have these teams, and I always was very, very jealous because we would be all running in the same race, and if you had the purple, you know, uniform on, they would have these rest stations, and they'd have all sorts of great drinks and Gatorade and M&Ms and all sorts of stuff where all the rest of us, like, were eating these goos and, you know, drinking, like, crappy water. But, you know, again, raising awareness. That's what issue number one is. It's a distinct phase, this transitional phase of cancer care as far as the survivorship care. And we really need people to know about it. So that was commandment number one. Number two is, believe it or not, this is something that sounds so simple, but it has been so difficult, is called actually providing and creating for each patient that finishes their active treatment a survivorship care plan. And one of our podcasts in defining survivorship will be actually, I will be sharing with you guys a personal thyroid cancer survivorship, you know, algorithm that I do for my patients, and we'll go through it and see what you're entitled to. And I have to say, I wish every single cancer survivor would get one of these, but they don't. Patients completing primary treatment should be provided with a comprehensive care summary. So these are things that really we are obligated as your caretakers to define to you the possible long-term side effects of the things that we're doing. Why is this transitional phase so important? Why is cancer survivorship so unique? Is because of these potential long-term side effects. So it's not like you burst your appendix, you get some right, you know, abdominal quadrant pain, you get a fever, you run to the hospital, you're taken to the hospital, Docs say, "Yep, your appendix just burst. We're going to bring you to the operating room. We're going to cut you open. We're going to clean that thing out. We're going to sew you back up. And if you make it 3 days, give you some antibiotics, then you're cured." You guys don't have that luxury. You know, this is a, you know, it's a day-to-day thing. It's a year-to-year thing. Some of these side effects can happen, you know, just unexpectedly at any point. And you need to know about these. And that's what the survivorship plan is. I used a few examples. So for breast cancer, what are some of the unique things for you ladies with breast cancer? I mean, body image, obviously, we all think about. As a man, I have no place talking about that because, you know, breasts on me would be a bad thing. But, you know, self-image, you know, body image for a woman is a completely different thing. How about if you girls, you women, right? Girls, that's silly, right? You women get chemotherapy. You can have neuropathy. So you could feel tingling or numbness of your fingers and your feet. And that doesn't sound so bad, right? But can you imagine? Like just waking up from a dream when your hands are numb, it's like you think you're having a stroke, right? Yeah. Can you imagine that? Also, fertility. What if you're a young woman, 30 years old, you want to have kids, and all of a sudden you've been given all sorts of chemotherapy? What do you do? How do you manage that? Okay, now I could get to the guys. I have a little more in common with that, right? Prostate cancer. How about urinary, like being able to like hold your pee? Like when you got to go, guys, you got to go after you've been radiated or have had surgery for prostate cancer. How about your sexual functioning, your intimate life? How about your bowel functioning? What if you go to the bathroom and you stand up and you see a bath, you know, a toilet full of bright red blood? You know, not a pretty sight, right? So these are all things that you guys have to know about, proctitis and bowel issues. How about rectal cancer? What if you guys have a colostomy? How's that for a life-changing situation where you guys have to make sure you have the right bags? And I have never met a colostomy patient who hasn't had an accident somewhere in public. Can you imagine the shame involved in that? Just terrible. These are all things that need to be talked about. How about my lung cancer patients? So we target your tumors, we shrink your tumors. Most of the time, hopefully, we eradicate those tumors. But, you know, what about breathing? What about walking up a set of stairs after you're done? What about just trying to live a normal life? You know, we have to talk about these things. Our brain cancer patients, yeah, you know, your neurological functioning, whether you're having any memory issues or things like that. And metastatic disease or palliative care is a whole different topic for patients, from bone metastasis to all sorts of different other issues that they're dealing with. So you can imagine the importance of this cancer care plan, this survivorship plan, which brings us into part number three. And I said this was huge. Evidence-based guidelines. So when I first started practicing, Angel, you know, I was trained well by very smart and diligent and well-known people. And they taught me well, you know, how to treat cancer patients. And in the beginning, we would treat patients the way we were taught. We can't do that anymore. You can't just treat someone because you were taught that way. You have to present to your patients all of the evidence-based medicine, all, not just what you were trained, how you were trained, what you know how to do, but what is the scientifically proven best method to treat you for your cancer. And that is, as I said, very huge, and it is getting better. Thanks to the American Cancer Society, American Society of Clinical Oncology, we are able to do that much, much more effectively. And also communicate your options as well. Quality measures. So, you know, we all heard about Moneyball. So even now, you guys know by now I'm a sports fan. So when we're evaluating talent, we're evaluating players, we're looking at their metrics, how fast they run, how high they jump, how hard they hit a ball, even the trajectory of the balls that they're hitting off of their bat, the angles that these balls are being hit. You know, the metrics are so ridiculous. You know, bat speed, all these types of things. Well, we need to develop and implement quality measures so we know how we're doing. So if a guy who's playing for the New York Metropolitans by the name of Pete Alonso is, you know, hitting home run after home run after home run, and I ask, well, how many home runs did he hit? They say, a lot. I don't want to hear a lot. I want to hear, you know, he's at 45, he's at 53. You know, I want to hear the number. I want to see his metrics. How is the polar bear? You know, he may be hitting home runs, but does he have a good batting average? Does he strike out four times and hit a home run then after that? We don't want that. So we want to also be held accountable to these same metrics, these indicators of how we're doing with you guys as survivors. We also want to have models of coordinated care. So we need the big players. We need Medicare, Medicaid services, National Cancer Institute, Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, the VA, and other organizations that support these programs that help us work together. So the surgeons and the radiation doctors and the medical oncologists and the, you know, the nurses and the nurse practitioners and the extended care players, the speech and lymphedema experts and everybody. We all need to coordinate our care. And that's really important. Survivorship is a public health concern. So we know, listen, this is the coronavirus pandemic. I think everybody on Earth is now a public health expert, right? We're all like Dr. Fauci, right? So why isn't cancer a public health concern? Well, guess what? It is. And that's what they were talking about back in the day in 1986 when these guys got together. And then in 2005, when they put these Ten Commandments together, that's kind of what they're talking about. We always worry about infant mortality. We worry about infectious disease in the third world, right? We worry about elder care. But you know what? You guys as survivors are absolutely entitled to having the same public health concerns regarding the special uniqueness. You guys are uniques, right? What was that? I don't know what that movie was with that actress, Winona Ryder. She was a unique, right? But that's what you guys are. You guys are uniques. And on the public health side, you know what? Your community needs to know that. As far as professional capacity, this is really interesting. Because to be honest with you, back in Dr. Mullen's days, back in Dr. McKinley's days, really, you know, after you were done with your oncologist, your primary care physician was not, you know, at all, you know, able to cope with the complexities of your survivorship. And there's only so many, you know, there's only so many oncologists that go around. And think about this. How about just something as simple as pain control? You would think an oncologist knows how to control cancer pain. I got news for you. They really don't. They turf you guys to a pain specialist. Do you know when Angel, if you had a slipped disc, you know when I could get you an appointment to see a pain specialist? Probably 3 weeks from last Wednesday. You know, it's not happening tomorrow.
Yeah.
And no doctor wants to prescribe medication. I mean, we are punished, you know, even as oncologists, for prescribing Schedule II drugs. So it's broken. Like I keep saying, the system is broken. But God bless these people, these pioneers who came up with and actually, indicated where the shortcomings were, what they would be, and what needed to be done in order to try to shift that paradigm, right? Of course. We were going to also talk a little bit about employment-related concerns. That's going to be at least one podcast, if not more. You guys are going to be discriminated against if you haven't been already, right? You're a cancer survivor. I know when you go to your job and you tell your boss you just got diagnosed with cancer, I'm sure everybody comes around and hugs you and tells you, I'm there for you, I will do whatever you need, and blah, blah, blah. They might even cook a meal for you, and some of them are very genuine, and they will do everything they can to help you. But at the end of the day, you guys may be discriminated against. You guys might lose your jobs. You might lose your insurance. You may not be able to get health insurance. You may not. You probably, up until recently, things are changing, thank God, even get life insurance. What if you have a bunch of little kids and you want to leave some life insurance? Very difficult. So these were things that were identified like 20 years ago, and these are things that we still struggle with today, Angel. We want to eliminate this discrimination. And again, we will address this as a separate issue. Thank God for the Affordable Care Act, because one of the problems that a lot of patients would have was once they got diagnosed with cancer, their health insurance would get canceled. You are absolutely entitled to adequate and affordable health insurance. And that is a truth. And that is another subject that we'll take individually. And lastly, we need to invest. We have to invest in you survivors. We have to invest in research. We are in the year 2021. we're only up to 2005 as far as the history of survivorship, and we are delineating and outlining and defining the shortcomings of survivorship, the uniqueness of survivorship. And now, 20 years later, we're not where we need to be. The system is still broken. So guests, friends, Crockers, I hope you enjoyed today's episode, Defining Survivorship 3, Lost in Transition. Angel and I will do our best to get these references up on our website. Shout outs, of course, Angel Santana, Rod Freeman, my friend Mikey Benzea, and Charlotte Larson for their support. And I look forward to talking to you next Sunday, where we will be going to Defining Survivorship number 4. And we will be talking about something very interesting, Angel.
What's that?
We will be actually looking at the other side of the ball. Mm. So if you're a Mets fan, you don't really take kindly to the Yankees. Ooh. If you're a Yankee fan, you don't take too kindly to the Mets, right?
Oh, no.
The only reason we work together so well is we're both Mets fans, right?
That's right.
Okay. All kidding aside, there are survivors who actually resent being coupled with that definition of being a survivor. And we are going to respectfully look at the other side of the data to look at some of the people, some of the survivors, who actually don't want to be recognized as survivors. Some people who want to be sort of out of that loop, who don't want to be included in this sort of scenario. And here on the Croc Podcast, we respect all opinions and all point of views, and we're going to present this to you to be fair, because we feel that a better knowledge, better information for our survivors will make for a better survivorship. God bless you. God keep you. And I wish you peace until next Sunday. Angel, would you like to say goodbye?
Hey, listen, I'm over here stunned just by everything that we just talked about. And I think that people that are listening to the show that may never even have encountered somebody that has cancer can get even more knowledge, more of opportunity to know, wow, this is what happens. So for me, as a coworker, that person that could come to me, or God forbid it's me going to, now I understand just exactly how to, interact with that person. They're just like us. Maybe they're going through a storm. Maybe they're going through something very difficult. But at the end of the day, we're all on the same team. We're all human, and we should never disconnect. So I got that out of that. That's a very powerful message today.
Angel, thanks for everything.
Hey, no problem.
See you next week.
See you next week.